We're up to Parshas Korach, and we'll quickly run through the Parsha and then review it with more depth. So, along comes Korach, relative of Moshe Rabbeinu, and brings along with him the two archenemies of Moshe Rabbeinu, Dathan and Aviram. Those two troublemakers have been making problems for Moshe Rabbeinu all the way back from when Moshe was a young man in Egypt. And Dathan and Aviram and Korach, they get with them 250 leaders among Israel, and they come and say, "Boy, you have some nerve, Moshe. You took all the honor for yourself. Everyone here, we're a holy people. Why do you make yourself greater than everyone else?" And in so doing, what they're trying to do is spur the people against Moshe, get the people to think that Moshe was playing nepotism and keeping honor for himself. And Moshe says to Korach, "You know what? You and your people wait till tomorrow morning. Hashem will show who's the holy one. And you'll each take a pen and we'll put the ktoras and we'll see who Hashem wants. But you got to realize only one is going to walk away alive. And listen here, you Levites who have joined this fight, they haven't yet enough that God gave you this greatness among Israel. You're the ones who are close to Hashem. You also want to all be Kohanim. You have to realize your claims are against God and not against Aaron. What do you want from him?" Moshe sends to summon Dathan and Aviram to try and make peace. And they say, "We're not coming. You make us promises. You're bringing us to a land flowing with milk and honey. We're not coming. Even if God tells us to come, we're not coming." And Moshe gets very upset. He says to Hashem, "Don't let them appease you with any offering. I've never taken anything from them, never hurt any of them. Everything I've done is on their behalf." And Hashem appears down at the honor of Hashem comes down. And Hashem tells Moshe, "If this is the way they're behaving, so I'm going to wipe out the people. I don't see anyone standing up with you." So Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces and they beg Hashem. There's one sinner here. Don't get upset at everyone. So Hashem tells Moshe, "Tell the people to distance themselves from Korach, Dathan, and Aviram." And Moshe goes to Dathan and Aviram. Remember, they refused to come up to Moshe. Moshe calls out and says, "Everyone, stay away from these wicked people. Don't touch anything they have. You don't want to go down with them." And everyone pulls away. And Dathan and Aviram come out blaspheming with their women and children. And Moshe says, "Now you're all going to know that God sent me. I didn't invent any of this. If they die a natural death, so then God didn't send me. But if a new creation happens, the earth splits open under them, swallows them and everything they own alive, so you'll know that they blasphemed God, that their fight was with God and not with me." And Moshe finishes talking and the ground opens up and swallows them and their houses and all their belongings, and everything goes down, and then the ground closes over them. And everyone ran away. They were scared. Who knows who's next? And a fire comes out and consumes the 250 people. And Hashem tells Moshe, "Tell Elazar to gather their pens and you'll coat them as beach with it. It'll be a commemoration for Israel that strangers shouldn't approach the holy. So there's never going to be like Korach again." The next morning, everyone comes complaining, and they say, "You guys did it. You tricked them. You caused the death of the people." And Moshe and Aaron turn to Ohel Moed, and Hashem tells Moshe, "Okay, you guys get out. I'm going to wipe out the people in a second." Moshe tells Aaron, "Take the pan and put some incense on it with fire, and you'll stop a plague, because there's an immense plague going out now." And Aaron runs out with it, and there have fallen 24,700 people. 14,700 people, I'm sorry. We'll see. So Hashem says, "Okay, we have to settle this once and for all. Let each tribe donate a staff, and Aaron's staff should be in the middle. You'll put him inside the holy tomorrow, and you'll see whoever's staff flourishes, that's the one I've chosen." And the next morning, Aaron's staff has produced flowers and produced whole almonds, and everyone sees that their staffs remain as is, and his blossomed. So God tells Moshe, okay, now take his staff and leave it there in the Holy of Holies, so that it'll be testimony that I chose it. And then the Torah describes how the people said, we're all going to die, who can come close to the temple? And Hashem commands Aaron and his family that they're responsible for watching that people don't approach where they're prohibited to from approaching. And the Torah then gives us the gifts that the Kohanim get. We have 24 gifts that Kohanim get. We have the story of Trumas Meiser that the Levites also give the Kohen a tithe of their tithe. So that's our parsha in a nutshell. Okay. That's a big number, right? Yeah. Okay. So let's see what's going on in our parsha. Last week's parsha, there was a decree that we're all the people are going to die in the desert, and so our parsha tells us how the people were. The people weren't really too happy. 40 years of wandering. And so the time was ripe for rebellion. And Korach is the wealthiest Jew that ever lived. There was a very wealthy Jew and there was a very wealthy non-Jew in Jewish history. Right? The wealthy Jew was Korach. He had 1,000 camels just to carry the keys to his storage houses. Pretty wealthy guy. I don't know what kind of wealthy storage houses they took with them in the desert, but maybe he had a Swiss bank account and he needed keys for all the safety deposit boxes out in Switzerland, who knows where else. So, what? Well, it's talking about citizens. Kings is a different story. There was a wealthy non-Jew, his name was Haman, also extraordinarily wealthy. So both of them had almost anything and everything you can imagine, but both of them had an ayin hara. They looked at things with jealousy. They wanted more and more and more honor and more respect, and that's what brought them down. Haman's telling the king, someone you like, you should honor him with your crown and your horse, etc. So the king realizes what Haman has up his sleeve. Haman's trying to usurp Ahasuerus. And Korach tries to usurp Moshe Rabbeinu. So, Korach, his intent is not for the sake of heaven. And that's where we always have to be careful when there's jealousy, when there's desire. So, no one steps forward and says, I'm jealous of you, so I hate you. You don't hear people talking that way. People don't say, I really want your position, so I hate you, so I'm going to say you're a liar and you're a cheat. No, everyone has pious reasons why they fight. We're all doing it for the sake of heaven. Someone once said, more people have been killed for the sake of heaven than anything else in the world. For the sake of heaven, for the sake of heaven. So you always have to be worried when people tell you they're doing something for the sake of heaven. Don't be so quick to believe it. Korach comes with claims. Everyone's holy. If everyone's holy, no one's holy. Yes, there are aspects where everyone's holy. But if you're going to have a nation where everyone is the leader, then there is no leader. Then the nation can't last. Communism doesn't work. We need leaders. And that's what Korach tries to change, and it's not going to work. So aside from the fact that Korach denies that Hashem sent Moshe, Korach's whole theology is problematic. We're not on that level. We're all equal. We're not all equal. We have teachers and teachers for the teachers and teachers to those teachers. Not all equal. There are different people who have perfected themselves to different levels, and there's a reason for that. Chazal tell us, if you daven for someone else, you'll get it first. If you really focus on davening for someone else and you need that same thing, then you get it first. A person, the higher up he is, the more he is responsible for davening for other people. King David says even his enemies, when they got sick, he'd put on sackcloth and weep and cry over them. What about someone who looks to harm other people? So then Chazal tell us, he gets hurt first. What does it say? What's the conclusion of that pasuk? He who has confidence in his wealth will fall. Because usually people are willing to hurt someone else when they have confidence in their own wealth. When a person feels like he's taken care of, that's when you have to start worrying about his revenge, about his honor. Because that's when a person feels comfortable enough to take things out on other people. Korach comes to Moshe with all kinds of claims. Korach brings a talis that's all blue. Where did it all start? Well, in last week's parsha, the Levites were shaved. They all had their hair, all their hair shaved. So Korach walks into the house and his wife says, "Honey, where'd your hair go?" So he says, "Moshe shaved it." She says, "Moshe did what? He shaved you like a watermelon? Now you're just like a pumpkin? You got no hair?"
Mr. Clean.
Mr. Clean. Yes, Korach. A respectable man like you lets Moshe tell you that in the name of God and you listen? So his wife starts egging him on. She says, "The tzitzis you're wearing, one blue thread, I'll make you a whole garment of blue. That's supposed to be royal? I'll show you what royal is. This is royal." So Korach's wife starts egging him on, and Korach had a vision, a correct vision. Korach saw that the greatest leaders of Israel were yet to come from him. He was right. The sons of Korach, the prophet Shmuel, who was equated with both Moshe and Aaron. So Korach was right. He was destined to greatness, but not himself, his future. And Korach saw things incorrectly. So Korach says, "I'm going to take Moshe on. Why does he give honors to other people and not me? Aaron, his brother, becomes the high priest. Why not me?" So he takes Dathan and Aviram. Those two troublemakers were always interested in a fight. Remember, Dathan was the one who was being beaten by the Egyptian after he figured out that the Egyptian had slept with his wife, and Moshe came in to save him. And then Dathan went the next morning and told Pharaoh that Moshe was the one who killed the Egyptian. Moshe saved Dathan's life, and that was how Dathan repaid him. And then Moshe had to flee out to Midian. So that's Dathan. And Aviram is his very brother. Dathan and Aviram are brothers. The first time Moshe meets them, they're boxing one another out in Egypt. They're beating one another up. And Moshe intercedes. So Dathan and Aviram are joining the fight, and they take the heads of state. Now, they did it smart. They brought 250 heads of state when there was a big commotion in the courts. There were a lot of people there. And then Korach starts his claim, and he has all his men interspersed in the crowd. And suddenly his men start yelling, "Yeah, you Moshe, what's wrong with you? You took everything for yourself. You're such a hothead and a haughty person." And the most modest person in the world, but they could say that. But because they had their crowd interspersed, so in a matter of minutes, they were able to sway the Jewish people, because it suddenly seemed like the masses were siding against Moshe, and the masses were quickly swayed. Hey, wait a second, why is it that Moshe is the leader and Aaron's the high priest and his relatives are in charge and his tribe is the Kohanim and the Levites? And hey, wait a second, and something stinks here, Moshe. So Korach is coming at a time where the people are very upset. It's just been decreed they're all going to die. And he set up the stage so that his rebellion worked. Where did it all come from? Korach was jealous. Chazal tell us, we have to realize that jealousy drives a person out of the world. Jealousy is what drives a person to attain something he has no right for. But he's jealous. So if a person is jealous, he's going to try for something, and he's going to try, and he's going to go beyond the limits, and he's going to die. Hakin'ah v'atavah v'kavod motzin t'adam min ha'olam. Jealousy, improper quest for honor, desires, that's what kills a person. Yes, Uli.
So on this time, I thought the cases of Moshe saving the Jewish guy's life and the two guys beating each other up in the desert were separate cases. But it was in fact the same guy. So something that doesn't make sense is when he said, in the original version, I thought he went to these two guys, he's like, hey, you know, he's got fire, and I, oh, you're going to kill me like you killed that other guy. It's like, you two strangers know. Oh, then everybody else must know. But now it doesn't make sense. It's like, it's the same guy from before, so of course he knows. So
right.
How can you say, oh, you know, then everybody must know?
Answer your own question.
Yeah, he told his brother.
Look at what just happened. Imagine I say to you, Uri, so you're going to do the same thing you told me yesterday? I shouldn't tell anyone you did? I'm telling you in front of them. What did Dasan just do to Moshe? You're going to kill me just like you killed the Egyptian yesterday, huh? So he just spilled the beans. What does Moshe say? Achen odadava. Okay, now I see where things are headed. That's what just happened here. Who is... What?
They don't do that this whole time. It's very interesting.
Most people don't. It's connecting two different midrashim. Okay, so where does jealousy begin in the world? Who is the first jealous person in the world? Who knows?
Okay.
Who is the first jealous person? You're 100% right. Hevel, right. Cain brought a sacrifice, and Hevel got jealous. That's why the Torah stresses. Hevel hevi gam hu mi bechorot sono mechel behen. Hevel came along and said, I'm going to outdo my brother Cain. The first one to bring a sacrifice was Cain. He didn't bring a good sacrifice. Hevel said, gee, I'm going to do better. So Hevel came along and brought a sacrifice that was better than Cain's sacrifice. Then Cain got jealous and went around and killed Hevel. But it began with Hevel's jealousy. Jealousy kicks a person out of the world. Hevel's jealousy, Cain's jealousy, they both got kicked out of the world. No remnant to either one. The whole world comes from Sheth. Yes. Okay, perhaps. I hear. So, Korach is getting people up against Moshe. Stop and think, where is this going to go? If Korach gets his way, what's the next step? No Torah, no Judaism. Because if Moshe's a liar, then he can't trust anything he said. And that's what Moshe saw right away. They're making a small claim. It's not a small claim. If they're going to succeed in this, that's it. Then we've opened the Pandora's box. And that's why Moshe says to Hashem, it's either them or me. If you're going to let them live, then I resign. Hashem had promised Moshe back at the burning bush. Moshe said to Hashem, if it's all going to be miracles, so then people will question me. God said, no, v'gam b'chai aminu le'olam, I will give them their own prophecy. They will see you're telling the truth. They'll believe in you for eternity. Moshe said, if it's only miracles, so then they'll always have to wonder, maybe I outsmarted them. Maybe there was a trick I knew that they didn't know. Moshe said, I don't want them to trust me because of miracles. That's not good enough. So Hashem said, fine, they'll all see prophecy at Mount Sinai. Now Korach's stepping onto the scene, and he's making Moshe look like a liar. And Moshe says, wait a second. First he tries to get Korach to turn back. Korach refuses. Dasan and Aviram refuse. The 250 elders refuse. Then Moshe tries to call them in. Let's talk about it a little bit more. They refuse to come. They say, if God tells us you're right, we're not interested. This is the way we want it. And here they gave away what their true intent was. It's not about piety. They wanted something with the capital I want. So when Moshe hears that, then Moshe says, okay, God, if they're going to get away with this, then it's all over. And that's what Hashem promises Moshe at the end of the story. Hashem says, Lo yiyech Korach, I promise you never again. And in truth, all the religions that came afterwards, they all said, Moshe emes v'toroso emes, but... They Christianity, Islam, they all built on top of that. So they come to Moshe and they say, you're proud. Does Moshe answer them? He falls on his face, because when someone tells you you're proud, there's no answer to that. What can you say? No, I'm not. So that's why Moshe falls on his face. He's got nothing to say. He says, God, you have to intervene. I can't argue this one. What are you going to answer when someone tells you you're proud? So the claim is burning, and all night long, Korach goes around and makes jokes and tells the people, look at him, he tells us a mezuzah is what brings sanctity to a home. If I have a room filled with books, what do I need a mezuzah for? And notice how Korach tries to get at the root of the mitzvah. Meaning, if I could understand the reasoning of the mitzvah, so then why can't I take it one step further? Let me do it the way I understand. And that's a very dangerous thing. That's what the Reform movement tried to do, the Conservative movement tried to do. I always say, Reform and Conservative are the modern-day Korach. Because that's what Korach also said. I could understand the mitzvah, so let me apply it the way I understand. And that's so. That's what we see, how it played itself out. Hashem says it's not going to work. So, Dasan and Aviram say, Lo na'ale, we're not going up. Chazal said they were right. They foretold their own future. But we learn from Moshe's patience. Moshe keeps trying, and from here there's a halacha that a court, even when someone's in contempt of court, the court should try to make peace with him. You go towards him. And Moshe says, I didn't take a single donkey from them. Logic would dictate they should fund my donkey. I'm traveling on their behalf. I had it good. What did I come there for? They should fund my traveling. I didn't take it for them. I never hurt any of them. There was never a court case which I ruled against them that they should have any vendetta against me. So there's no basis for this. So Moshe tells them, take the pan. Why does he tell them to take the pan? Because he figured that's something that everyone knew was lethal. Look, Dasan and Aviram, Nadav and Aviu, Aaron's own children, died when they took the pan. So Moshe figures he's given them the greatest threat, and they were so gung-ho, they went with it. So Hashem tells Moshe, stay away. And Moshe begs Hashem, don't destroy everyone, it's only one person that sinned. In spite of the fact that the people had a sin as well, because the people had joined in, and they had backed Korach. So Hashem says, okay, tell them all to distance themselves. Dasan and Aviram come out blaspheming, they and their children. Look at what machlokas can do. So this is one idea people very often miss. Stay away from machlokas. And every machlokas, every time there's a fight, people say it's for the sake of heaven, it's for the sake of heaven. I've seen many fights for the sake of heaven. I haven't seen one fight for the sake of heaven. I've seen many fights where people claimed it was for the sake of heaven. But I don't remember a fight that was, that you could say, yeah, that was for the sake of heaven. People say it, but go to the source. Go see. Many people will say, I'm fighting my Rebbe's fight. Yeah, go ask the Rebbe. Did he really say to fight that fight? So, the 250 people are burnt alive. Yeah?
I was just going to say that the perfect example what you're talking about is like Hamas or whatever, where they say, yeah, we're doing the work of Islam, killing everyone, killing all the infidels, like Dhaka the Jews and Dhaka the Western world, like to them represents Christianity. When really, supposedly, their prophet himself said, those are Dhaka, the religions you're not supposed to touch. So, yeah. You're right, like, people who go around and say, yeah, we're fighting the fight, actually, sometimes don't even realize that, you know, they're not. And jealousy, like, simply the ignorance of what you stand for. You don't even really know what you stand for. You just got so gung-ho that you can't concentrate on what you stand for. So it's the ignorance.
I hear. So we see that Moshe and Aaron fall on their face in our parasha, and from here we learn the halachos of nefilas apayim, what we fall on our faces. What's the idea of falling on one's face? So we're covering our faces, really, and that's a sign of humility, of shame, that a person says, when I'm opposite Hashem, I cover myself. Like Moshe Rabbeinu covered his face, he wouldn't look when he was standing opposite Hashem. The second idea is that a person says, I'm subservient to Hashem. That's part of the tshuva. And the third idea is that a person indicates, I can't even see what I'm doing. I'm completely in your hands, Hashem. It's like the idea that we put our feet together when we stand in Shemona Esrei. It's as though we're saying, I realize I can't do anything without you. Which goes back to an interesting Dvar Torah I heard on last week's Parsha. That's so beautiful, it's worth mentioning here. Why do we have a navel? Why do we have a belly button? So every other incision that a person has heals. A person has surgery, it closes, it heals. The navel doesn't heal. You have to tie it, and then it remains for life. What's the idea? What? It scars, right, but it's a scar that remains for life. It's this little knot you have in the middle of your stomach, and it's there for life. And we could develop this Dvar Torah. I heard it from Avi Bar, who didn't remember who he heard it from. We could develop it one more step in all martial arts, and really in our blessings we see it also, and in Tanakh you see it also, that the strength is right here by the paunch. Right, we say Ozer Yisrael Bigvura. We girdle ourselves with strength. Where you wear your belt, that's the strength. And in the martial arts, they talk about the chi or the ki, the center of energy down here, just under the belly button. So, what is so important about the belly button? So he said like this: the belly button reminds us that there was a time when you couldn't talk, and you didn't even know what was going on. And all your needs were taken care of. So we have these times where we feel like, I have to do this and I have to do that, and what will be if I don't? We have a reminder, our belly button. Remember, God is perfectly capable of taking care of you. He did it for 9 months. He got you where you are today. And that's why the Meraglim, the spies, their punishment was that their tongue that spoke badly went down to their navel. Because their whole claim was, well, if we don't do this, then it won't work out. And there's no way God could make this one work. Really. So that's why their death went through the navel, because they forgot the message. What? Yeah, they forgot the message of the navel. They forgot the message of the belly button. So when we put ourselves down and we say, Tachanun, what we're saying is, I can't do it without you. I realize you're running the show. So that's the idea of Nechilat Apayim. When we fall on our faces, we put our arm in front of our face. So, at the end of the story, there's one person missing. You guys know who's missing? On Ben Pelet. On Ben Pelet. His wife tells him, hey buddy, if Moshe's the boss, you're not the boss. If Korach's the boss, you're not the boss. So why are you fighting? Who cares who's the boss? You're still not the boss. Olin says, you know, you have a point, but I already told them I'm in with them. So his wife was a smart wife. She said, yeah, she said, own. She said to him, go lie down. I'll take care of things. You go to sleep. So they come to call him for the fight, and she sits out there and she uncovers her hair and she makes believe she's getting ready to be intimate with her husband. So they all run away. Hey, that's not modest. Everyone that comes sees her combing her hair, runs away. So they continue their fight with Moshe. By the time he wakes up, everyone's dead and he's still alive. So his wife saved him. So Chazal tell us there's a person who goes after his wife's advice and ends up in perdition. Who was that? Korach. And then there's a person that goes after his wife's advice and ends up in Gan Eden. Who was that? On. So what do I say on that Gemara? You see that everyone goes after their wife's advice. The only question is, where does she lead you? But she's leading. You just got to make sure you get the one that leads you in the right direction. But at the end of the day, they're taking you by the hand. So, yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but can I get a little more background on Owen?
I don't know any more background on Owen.
Is it based on Reagan guy?
He was their relative. It says Owen ben Pelet. Chazal said it was Owen ben Palu. What? No, of Dasan and Aviram. Own. Aleph Vav Nun. Own. So, what? Nun Sufit. Right. So, you have 250 men dead, top men of Israel, and their pans, and Hashem says, use it to coat the Mizbeach, so people will remember they're not supposed to approach the altar if they're not from Aaron's family. What happens the next morning? The people come and they say, it's all your fault. Look at how many people you made die. You tricked them. You said, you see, you cursed Dasan and Aviram. You said they would be swallowed. You caused the 250 people to die. You shouldn't have nullified the validity of the firstborn. So the people are coming and complaining. And when they're complaining, what they're really doing is two things. Number one, they're siding with Korach because they're saying, hey, it's all your fault, Moshe and Aaron. And number two, they're siding with the golden calf. How so? Because really, when did the Levites and the firstborn switch? When did the firstborns lose their right? When they sinned with the golden calf. And that's when God said, okay, if you guys could go after a golden calf, you're not fit to be my servants. It's the Levites who did not go with the golden calf. They are fit to be my servants. Now that the people are turning back and saying, hey, wait a second, why aren't the firstborns priests anymore anyways? And then the people in mass come and complain the next morning. So they're really going back to the sin of the golden calf. They're saying, what did we do so wrong anyways? So they start dropping like flies. 14,700 people dropped dead. And when Moshe went up to receive the Torah, different angels told him different secrets. The angel of death told him the secret to stop me is the spices on the pan. So Moshe sends Aaron out, and Aaron runs out and stops the plague. So Hashem does this over and over again in the Torah. Whenever you have something that seems to be bad, Hashem shows you it could also be good. It begins with Hashem. The people thought Hashem only punishes. So when they left Egypt, Hashem healed them right away, right? There was the waters that no one could drink. Hashem healed it right away to show them I don't only punish. You think that all I did in Egypt, I'm such a zealous God. Look at how many 10 plagues and everything else. No, I also do good things. It's up to you. The people thought the staff could only bring punishment. So Hashem showed them how the staff brought water. The staff could give them blessings and so on. And here, the people thought the pan only causes death. Hashem showed them how the pan could also bring life. So Hashem says, let's settle this once and for all. And we have the story of the staff and the almonds. And then Hashem tells Moshe, leave it as testimony because these rebellious people shouldn't have claims against me. What did Hashem call them? B'nai Meri, the rebellious ones. What's Moshe going to call them in next week's parasha? Shimuna HaMorim. Listen here, you rebellious ones. So Hashem already called them rebellious ones. Yes, but Hashem's allowed to. He's the boss. Moshe was wrong, and according to some commentaries, that was Moshe's sin. That in next week's parasha, Moshe allowed himself to call them rebellious ones. So the Kohanim are given the responsibilities of protecting the Holy of Holies. And then the Kohanim are also given the Truma and all the gifts, the 24 gifts that Kohanim get. 12 gifts that are holy, eaten in Jerusalem, 12 gifts that are not. So the Levites are also given a responsibility to give a tithe of their tithe, to give Trumas Meiser. And Hashem says, I want them to give us kol chelbo. What does chelbo mean? The best portion. Mikol chelbo es mikdesho mimenu. Take the best portion. And from here we have a rule. When you take off truma, you should take the best. So you guys are going to be mafir truma bezat Hashem. You don't take the dinky, rotten little pieces of grape as truma. You take the best, luscious grapes for truma. Today, though, we don't eat the truma, so we don't do that anymore. But imirtz Hashem, very soon, will be giving the truma to Kohanim again. So you take the best grapes to give Kohanim when they eat it. You take the best wine when Kohanim are going to eat it. The Torah says, just as the Israelites take off truma, so too, you too should take off truma. So Chazal say, why does it say you too? Here the Torah was teaching us a concept of shlichus. What does shlichus mean? That you can make a messenger. You could make a shaliach. You could tell someone else, do this on my behalf. So you can tell someone else, I want you to take off truma for me. But we also learn another concept, that the shaliach has to be as obligated as you are. And if you send your non-Jewish neighbor, could you go take off truma from the grapevine for me? So he says, sure, I've seen you do it a million times, I'm going to go do it. So he goes and starts to take off truma. The halacha says it doesn't work because he's not biblically obligated. But you know, rabbinically, if a non-Jew takes off truma, he says, I wanted it to be like my Jewish neighbor. I wanted it to go to the Kohanim. Then it goes to the Kohanim. A non-Jew could give leket, shikha, peya. He could give the gifts to the poor, and he could even give truma midrabanan. And then the conclusion of the parsha is the responsibility that people should maintain the gifts of the truma and the miser in purity. Any questions? Yes.
So why would in that little thing they brought there with the truma and everything, it seems like the Rabbanan is being more lenient than the Maraita. Isn't the Rabbanan supposed to be bad egg?
How's the Rabbanan more lenient? No, it didn't say you can make a non-Jew as your messenger. It just said if he wants to take off of his own fruit truma, then midrabanan, that takes effect.
Why wouldn't
truma? Because he wants to. If he wants to, he can. What? Yeah. It's in Kiddushin. Very nice. Okay.